Welcome to Built Brave. Driven women sharing their stories to show others what is possible for them. Because we were all born brave. I'm your host, Lo Wentworth, and this is Built Brave. Are you ready? All right. Try not to be too long so you guys can get into this episode because I had a lot of fun with today's guest. We recently met over a coaching program that we're doing and it felt like I was talking to a soul sister. Like we talked about a lot of stuff and went deep really quick and how our paths are so different but similar at the same time. I mean, she decided one day that she just wanted to quit her corporate job and it wasn't for her. And then navigating that and what it looked like for her to create her own business and start traveling and figure out what it is she wants to do with her life instead of what she was told to do with her life or she observed growing up what she should be doing with her life. We all have that. Like I call it the checkbox express. We talk about, like with beliefs and traveling and, you know, how we're perceived as brave when we just make decisions and do them. And sometimes, you know, the vulnerability hangover, the WTF, what the hell just I do happen. And then we talk about like phrases that get thrown around in like the personal development world about, you know, uncovering yourself, coming home to you and what that actually means. On this path of discovering who you are and being unapologetic because no one is living your life but you. And you are the only one who is best equipped to lead your own life. We talk about validation a lot. And I'm raising my hand because as women, we all know we seek validation a lot. If you haven't read the book Untamed by Glennon Doyle, I would definitely pick it up because she addresses this and she addresses so much in there. It's like now becoming my little Bible and I want to reread it again and have fun and figure out more of who I am and what stories resonate with me and all of that. It's just a really good book. So with that, let us begin. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Built Brave podcast. I'm so excited to have Britt on today's podcast. So, Britt, if you can take it away and let everyone know who you are and what you're about.
Yeah, so I'm Brittany Tucker. I go by Britt. I always say my friends call me Britt. So because you're afraid of a friend, you can call me Britt. But I'm a professional speaker and I'm a life coach for women. And my mission and passion is to really help women learn to ditch society's checklist that we've been taught growing up and to really fully step into who they were created to be. And I think that looks a little different for everybody.
It does. I hate the cookie cutter system.
Yes, right. It's so weird because I feel like the cookie cutter system is women what we were taught. Like that's what we're supposed to do, right? To have a happy life or to have a successful life. And I did all those things. And I woke up one day in corporate America and I was super unhappy and unfulfilled.
So telling people your story, what did the buildup look like for you before you quit corporate America, woke up one day and was like, peace out?
Yes. I said some other not so nice words when I did it, but yes.
You can say not so nice words on here too. It's okay.
Good, perfect. So I grew up in a very small town, in Georgia, right above Savannah. So I was the true Southern Belle. We went to etiquette classes, you know, growing up, and I was just, I felt like I lived in a bubble, which I did at the time. And there are so many things from my childhood that I'm grateful for. But there are so many lessons I've learned from that. And I was just taught at a young age. And I don't think it was really taught, though, Lo, when I look back on it. I think it's more of what I observed around me, right? Like, I'm supposed to get married and have four kids and have a house with a white picket fence and have a good job or be a stay-at-home mom. And I did all these, you know, I checked everything up to that point. Obviously, I've never been married. But it's interesting because I think that lifestyle fits some women, right? You know, I have some of my very best friends and this is exactly what they did. And I look at them and I'm like, they're on their right path, right? Like, how come that wasn't my path? And so, yeah, I checked all the boxes and here we are.
I'm so happy you brought that up about other women who, I'll just call them traditional roles, who went into the traditional female role and they're happy about it. And there are other women like you and myself who are like, there's got to be something different, a little more. But I've been watching over time and just like the culture of it, it's like, when did become staying at home as a mom mean you're not fulfilling your life?
Right.
Versus like, you got to go out, do something. It's the same I've noticed with like having your own business versus wanting to work in corporate America. Like, just because people work better in corporate America doesn't mean they want to have their own business and vice versa.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, I think it's, you know, women, we're so quick to judge other women, right? And I feel like we're the worst ones about it. It's like, well, why would she do that? Or, you know, my life is not as good as hers because she's on a different path. But I mean, everybody's put on this earth for a purpose. I truly believe that. And we all have talents and gifts. And some people, their talent is to raise children. That is their gift, you know. For me at this point in my life, it's not, and I'm okay with that. And so I think it's just giving women permission and the power to understand that we all can have different lives and still be happy, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's just really important, like cutting the cookie cutter system like out. It's really hard to do, especially when you're examining your own beliefs because you grew up with it, like whether it was taught to you or like you said, you observed it, what the expectations are. And so that's where you're challenging your beliefs about things, which can be very daunting, not easy, not as glamorous as everyone else. Yes. Is like, oh, this is your limiting belief. Okay, cool. You found out. Let's move on. When it's like, just because you're weird doesn't mean it shifts like that when you shifts out like that, snapping your fingers, rather to change it. It's not saying like, okay, today I am not lactose intolerant, but yet I am lactose intolerant, which is a really weird analogy to put, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's a process, right? I mean, and it's so interesting because in high school I was like, you know, I don't know if you've read Glennon Doyle's Untamed, but she talks about like the golden girls, you know, and the popular girls. I was that in high school, you know, I was that girl. And now when I go back to my hometown, I'm like reverse. I'm like the black sheep because I'm not doing what everyone else is doing. And so it's so interesting how those roles have like changed. I always laugh and tell people, I stopped going to weddings in my hometown because all the old ladies would come up to me and say, "You're not married yet, you know, like you're not dating anyone." And in reality, I just wanted to stop and say, you know, how about asking someone like, are they happy? Right. Or what are they doing with their life? But for so many people, that's what defines their life. And that's what defines success. And I don't believe that anymore. So.
That's so interesting that you say that, because I grew up in a small town and I'm currently visiting a small town during Corona and all this, and, you know, figuring out what my next moves are. But that was, I got recognized at a grocery store and immediately I go inside and I'm like, fuck. Because it's one of those things of being like, oh, you're back in town, you enjoying it? Mm-hmm. Or it's, oh, I see you're not married. And I'm just like, oh my God. We're going to go through this. This is going to be even more awkward. Okay, cool beans. At least she didn't ask if I was seeing someone, because that would make it even more awkward.
More awkward.
Like, no. Like, how could you not be? Like, I get this all the time. You're so beautiful and smart. Yes. Like, why aren't you dating someone? And I go, because I have standards and I'm not willing to lower those standards.
Yeah, I get that all the time too. That's so interesting you said that. People are always like, oh my gosh, Brittany, like, can't believe you're not dating anyone. And, you know, and I date, you know, I've had boyfriends, and for me, it's just not, it's not a number one priority, because I truly believe if I'm in my lane and I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing and serving other people and loving on other people daily, like I will cross paths with that person. And I am very confident in that. I'm not one of those girls who worries about, you know, well, am I going to be single forever or this and that? And maybe that is my path. I have no idea, but I know if I'm happy right now and doing what I'm supposed to be doing, that's all that matters. So.
Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think people make you like when they're saying it's kind of like you're to yourself or like, is there something wrong with me? Just yes. Like any beliefs you're tackling, you're just like, well, there must be something wrong with me if internally my life is going through crap, but yet other people are like, you got it, it's great. And you're just like, I don't feel like it. No.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we as women, we're always going to question ourselves, right? It's especially type A, which I'm type A, you're type A, you know, overachievers. There's always going to be that fear and that doubt of, well, what can I do better? Or how can I be a better person? When in reality, we just need to be who we are, who we're made to be, not strive any harder than that.
Which is still challenging in the cookie cutter system.
Right. That's why you just throw it out the window. You just rip up that piece of paper and you just chunk it out the window. I mean, oh my gosh. Like, I wish I could go into every high school. Like, that is my goal right now. I'm really targeting like college age women. And I could just even get to them when they're younger than that, you know, and say like, you do not have to follow the checklist. Like, don't follow the checklist. I did it. Take me as an example. I did it. I checked everything and I woke up and I was like, okay, well now let me start the whole process of learning who I freaking truly am. Right. Because for so long I was given a label and I was told how to act and I was told what to do and say, and, you know, in order to fit in. And I think a lot of that comes from validation, right? We, as women, we seek that external validation. So.
Oh my gosh. Validation. It's the whole reason why it took me so long to get to where I am today, especially with the podcast, because I was listening to all the stories like Lewis Howes, Gabby Bernstein, yes. And it was like a consistent thread. It's like, well, I've been doing it for like, we'll just say 5 years. I hit my goal and then I felt empty inside. And they're all like, oh, I was seeking validation. I was seeking to prove, mm-hmm. you know, some bully or classmates wrong from high school. And I'm sitting here and I'm like, I don't want that to be my story, because it could. I'm just like, yep, I'm feeling the same way, seeking validation. So I didn't want to do something where it's like, oh, I'm seeking validation, but I'm never going to get that validation I'm seeking because it's not possible.
Yeah, it's external, right? I mean, I think that was a big process of me, kind of that moment in my life where I was like, okay, there's more to life than this. It was really digging deep, right? And like shedding all those layers. And it's not a pretty process at all. It's like, for once in your life, you have to look at the raw side of yourself and your weaknesses and the bad decisions you've made. But I think the process in the end is worth it, you know, and I feel like I'm still on the journey. You know, I started my self-development journey probably like 29, 30, and I'm 36 now. So I'm still on it. Like, I still learn so much about myself every day. But I truly feel like at this point in my life that I am confident enough to say I am the woman I am, right? And I'm not going to change for anyone. And I've got to learn to embrace it. The great parts about it, the bad parts about it, the ugly parts about it, the flaws, like, because all of it's a gift, right? I feel like even our flaws are gifts. Even our mistakes are gifts. If we can be vulnerable enough to share those with people, like, I mean, that can touch a life, right?
Mm. You said so much there. Like, one of the reasons, I don't know if I told you this in our prep call, was so people, women especially, don't feel like they're alone. Like, I was in law school, first semester, getting to the through first midterms ever, you beat up, spit out all of that. And I was in a bathroom with a bunch of women. And one of the women was brave enough to ask if any of us cried every day. And I could feel the energy in the room. It was like they first took the collective breath that they've had forever. Mm-hmm. And then it was popcorn style, like, oh my God, me too, you too, mm-hmm. all of this. And I'm sitting here and I'm like, there's something wrong here. Yes. When this is what's happening, but yet we're not talking about it, and we're all feeling the same way.
Yes, that's such a powerful story. Gosh, I wish I would have been in that bathroom. You know, I think women, we look for permission, right? It's like, well, let me see what Susie's doing, and then I'll make my decision, right? Well, if Susie will take the first step, then I'll take the step after her. And I think that's a good example, right? It's like we're holding it in. But when we see that one woman has been brave enough, you know, to step forward, then it's like everyone follows after. So
that just reminds me, now that we're talking about it, I'm thinking about it, about Glennon Doyle in her Untamed book. A little spoiler, guys. She has short stories. And one of the short stories was she was talking about how she realized girls and women look outside versus the guys looking in. And so just to give a quick synopsis for everyone, she was peeking in on her teenage son, like all mothers do, and got caught. So she covered her butt behind by asking them if anyone was hungry. The guys immediately said yes, didn't look away from the TV, but she noticed the girls in the room looked at each other, and somehow one of them was the quote-unquote spokesman of the group and says, "Nah, we're good." And it was just an interesting dynamic, and I'm just like, yep.
That's how life plays out, right? Gosh, and yeah, I think, I don't even remember how old she said those kids were. I remember that story in the book too. It's so profound, but I mean, it starts at a young age with women, and here we are in our 30s and we're freaking still doing it. You know, I told someone the other day after I read that section in the book, I said, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've been out to dinner with friends, girlfriends, and the waiter's like, well, do you want something to drink? You know, like a cocktail. And I immediately, it's like, well, are you going to get one? You know, it's the same thing. So yeah, I think women, we definitely do. We seek external validation, not only from the whole world around us, but from even those closest to us too.
Mm-hmm. Drinking is interesting in itself. Like, are you going to get one? Are you not? Like, I stopped drinking a long time ago because I didn't like how I felt the next morning after just having a drink. And it's just like, well, I don't like that. I don't want to, my body doesn't like that. So I'm just not going to do it. But since we're on the topic of validation, it's been interesting since then, seeing how uncomfortable people are when we're out, you know, maybe at a bar, maybe we're out for dinner, we're going out dancing, and I'm good with not having a drink. And somehow that makes them feel uncomfortable. And they're like, well, you should drink, like get a drink, or why aren't you drinking? Like there's something wrong with me that I was an alcoholic or something that caused it, instead of it being a personal choice. Yeah. And I'm just like, yo, if you have an issue with it, that's not on me. That's on you. I'm comfortable enough to be like, no, I don't want to drink and I don't have to drink. But yes, I do like dancing. I can go out dancing if I want to. They don't need to correlate.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a good statement, right? Like I can have fun without doing that. But how powerful is that for you to be able to speak up and say that, right? And I'm sure it'll continue, right? Where people question you like, why do you not? Well, that's just, you know, that's my personal decision and I'm not going to choose to drink, but guess what? I can still go dance. You want to dance, you know? So, yeah, that's great. That's interesting that you shared that. I like that.
Mm-hmm. It's the same with law school or being an attorney, when I'm just like, yeah, I don't actually like being an attorney. And everyone's like, how? You spent all this money, you did this. And I go, I don't like it. Like, how many people are actually using their undergrad degree?
Right. Very few. Very, very few.
That I know of.
I know. I think, yeah, my master's degree is in something completely different that I used it for about 5 years and I no longer use it. So that's pretty common. I think that's why we find more and more people going back to school for the second time. I've always said colleges should definitely have like where you are required to sit in on the job that you think you want for like an entire semester, like every day, 8 to 5, because you're going to learn a lot about it.
Mm-hmm. I got asked by one of my high school students one time, well, I was all in college and the school, high school was going through like a dual program where people could get their associate's degree. And he was having, my teacher was having a conversation with me about it. And I go, yes, if they're wanting to get the core classes out of the way. If there's some, like, say they have to take, I don't know, physics or something they're not good at, but no, it's a core class they have to take. I understand that, because then I will open them up to take electives to figure out more of who they are and what they want to do. But I don't subscribe to, well, everyone has to do it. So then their AA degree is taken care of. They have two more years of college that they don't have to pay for and all of that. And I go, that's not the right reason to do it, because even if someone says they want to be a nurse, they might start taking nursing classes and realize they don't want to do it, or they might do an internship and realize they don't want to do that. Well, that also then adds on to their college years, so they could end up going for 4 years of college because they've had to switch things around a bit. And even then it's like, well, I don't know if that's exactly what they want to do. And sometimes they find out, we're like, nope, that's not.
Yeah, I think the school system's made for one type of student too, if you think about mm-hmm. it. It's like, sit straightforward, you know, take tests. I was a horrible test taker. I've always been a horrible test taker. And I think it just, excuse me, the school system nowadays is just set up for one type of student. My goal eventually, I would love to start my own charity around teaching entrepreneurship to women, like high school students in other countries, mm-hmm. because, you know, you're an entrepreneur, I'm an entrepreneur, and I never knew about this growing up, you know, that a woman could go own her own business and be a badass and impact lives, and being able to teach women those skills would be so amazing, because I know, you know, this journey for myself is great. It's very rewarding, but it's been very hard. And I wish I would have known of more women before me at that time to kind of guide me through everything.
And here you are today on the podcast.
I know.
Let's back up a little bit into your story, because you've shared it a little bit with me. So you woke up one day from corporate, and it was, if you can correct me if I'm wrong, that day you woke up, you walked in and gave your resignation, said you were done. And so what did you do after you walked in, said you were done? What did it look like on that journey to start figuring out who Britt actually is?
Yes. So when I do not remember the day of the week, you would think I would know it now because it was such a pivotal point in my life. But I was sitting at my desk and I actually got a really nasty email. That's how it started. And I read the email like 5 or 6 times just to confirm what was being said through the email. And I just remember sitting there and being so pissed off that someone would talk to me that way. And I stood up from my desk. This is my impulsiveness that plays into my personality, which can be a benefit sometimes, but sometimes it's not so great. But I walked downstairs and I just said, I'm done. I'm done. And I had no resignation letter typed up. I had to go home and do that. They escorted me back to the office and got my things. And here I was. I was leaving a very high paying job at a young age, where I was traveling the world. And I just remember going home that night and just saying, there has to be more to life than making it this far and people treating you so horribly. Like, this is not what life is about. And I'll share this. I share this story a lot, Lo, but I feel like I can share this on your podcast because you're so open and blunt, and I love it. So when I went down to that manager's office, my manager at the time was amazing, but there was another manager who had actually sent the email, and she looked at me and she said, if you're okay with only making $50,000 the rest of your life, then go ahead and leave, is what she said to me. And I will never forget that as long as I live, you know. And $50,000 is, you know, that's a lot for some people, you know. I was making more at the time, obviously, but and I think back on that moment, I'm like, that's what, I almost feel sad for her, because that is what defined her, was a number amount versus that's not what life is all about, right? It's so much more than that. So quit the job. I was out of work for, I believe, 4 to 6 months. And I had a non-compete at the time that I had signed, which as an attorney, I'm sure you know all about those. And so I had to wait it out. And then when my non-compete was over, I took like a job in between, just like a sales job. And when my non-compete was over, I picked up the phone and called this orthodontist in the country who was very, very successful and teamed up with him. And he's the first person who gave me a chance on my own. And so it went from there. But, after that, I still was on the process of finding myself, right? I was in the process of shedding all these layers that had been built up for so long. And so after owning my business is when I took a sabbatical at 32. Was I 32 at the time? 31. I feel like most people take sabbaticals in their 20s. And here I was. And I was like, I woke up, same thing. I woke up one day in my apartment and I was like, I don't feel at home here. I don't feel at home here anymore. So I put my stuff in storage and took a sabbatical for a couple of months, went and lived in Bali. And so it's been a fun journey of just, and people always use that term, like coming back home to yourself, right? For me, it's like, it's uncovering yourself. Like we're just buried under culture and we're buried under opinions and we're buried under lessons that we learned that are not even the truth, So that's a little bit of my journey.
I think that's interesting. You brought up the term or the phrase coming home to yourself. Like, cause even when you said that to me, I'm just like, what does that even mean? Yeah. Like, I don't even know what it means. There's so many terms that get thrown around in the personal development space. And I'm like, what does that even mean? Yes. Really be yourself. Well, what if I don't know what myself is? So what does that look like?
Yeah. I mean, you're right. Coming home to yourself is such a popular term in this space. I think home is just like you said, it's who you are, but home could mean so many different things. For me, I just posted yesterday on my Instagram how travel brought me home. And I think it was getting on an airplane by myself and visiting these countries where I would step into a community. Normally when I travel like that, I go for at least 2 weeks to a month. And I would step in and there were no pre-labels for me. There were no expectations for me. There was no, this is who I was. Like it's almost like starting over. It's like a blank slate, we're going to a place where no one knows you. And I think those were moments where I was able to sit still with myself and really acknowledge who I was and learn who I was just by being around people who didn't know me at all.
Isn't that interesting how when you put yourself in different positions, like you said, like you have that clean slate to be like, well, no one knows me. I can be whoever I want to be. So let's have some fun. I have no idea, no preconceived notions, like or what the cultural norms are or that history in whatever country you are visiting or state rather, because there's cultures all over the place and just to see what happens.
Yeah. Travel. I don't know if you've ever traveled alone. And if anyone listening has never done it, I highly, highly recommend it for women, especially. I think there's something so powerful about getting on an airplane and just saying, I'm going to go do this by myself, and I'm going to figure it out, even if I don't speak their language. And I mean, I have so many crazy travel stories where I'm like, oh, I probably should have, learned a couple of terms before I flew over here. But that in itself, travel is probably one of the biggest things that helped me uncover who I truly was.
Well, and it also exposes you to so much as well. Like you said, you grew up in a bubble. And so when you start questioning outside that bubble of what you were taught, it shows you really who you are in different ways of thinking. I mean, part of the reason I started this podcast was also, I'm obsessed with how people think, their perspective, how they got to where they are, just so that one, I can blow my own mind. And two, it also challenges my own beliefs whatever they may be, I could sit here and be like, oh, well, Britt's the most confident person in the world. And I'll be like, wait, why do I think that about her? So yes, that must mean there's something I don't think is confident about me. Mm-hmm. That's just like an example to put it on. But it's just really interesting to see.
That's cool. That's a great way to look at it. I like that you said that. Now I'm going to like, I'm going to be thinking that the rest of the day, you know, like it's a good perspective. I love it.
You'll wake up at 3 a.m. and tell me something that you've had some epiphany from this conversation.
Yeah, totally.
So you talked about how you were impulsive on these things about, you know, quitting your job and then deciding to go on a sabbatical and getting out of your apartment. In those moments, from what I have learned about people who perceive about me, those are brave moments. But my question for you was, did you feel like it was brave, or did you just decide to do it because you just had enough?
Yeah. I mean, I guess looking back on it, it's brave, right? And it's interesting because my sister and I are very alike. We're also very different. And she's always like, Brittany, you just take risks so easily. And I don't view it that way. I think, for me, I always feel confident in knowing. And I think this comes from, I failed so many times that regardless if what's on the other side is a plus or a positive or a great, you know, added benefit to my life, if it's not, it's still a lesson learned. And I want to be able to look back on my life and say, I live life to the fullest, you know? And I always laugh and say, if it's my time to go, it's my time to go. Like, at least I'll be doing something I enjoy doing, you know? But I don't really, I mean, I guess it's brave. I guess it's also, I used to question myself so much before making decisions because I was a perfectionist for so long, and that would delay my decision making. So I have found now that if I just don't think about it and I just do it, then the results are like 10 times better, you know? Like, sometimes I'll make a decision and then like 2 hours later, I'm like, oh shit, like, what did I just do? Or what did I just agree to do? Or what the hell did I just sign up for? You know? But I think those decisions like that have been the most rewarding in my life.
Yeah. I'm glad you hit on that and said, like, gave your perspective, because even in my perspective, I'm kind of just like, I just did those things. We talk about like what the definition of brave is, and I'm sitting here, I'm like, well, my definition means like it's very like Amazonian or Viking-esque, mm-hmm. going into battle, like all of that, despite worrying. And I'm just like, well, when I made different decisions in my life, I just did them. Mm-hmm. There was no fuss around it. Like, it sounds like for you, there wasn't really any fuss around it until later when your brain caught up with your body and you're just kind of, yes. Oh shit, what did I do?
Yeah. Well, what's that insanity, right? It's like doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. So at what point of your life are you so unhappy or so unfulfilled that you're going to make that next step, whether it's uncomfortable or not, to be able to make a change in your life? And I think every woman gets to that point in her life, you know, obviously at different ages, at different moments, but for me, mine came pretty early. So
looking back on your life so far, is there anything you would say has been a regret of yours?
Oh, that's a good question. I have a ton of regrets. You know, I think one of the biggest things in relationships, I truly believe relationships, and this is not only intimate relationships, but this is friendships, this is community. For so long, like, I had such a wall up, and that was like to protect myself and what I had created myself. But one of the biggest things I've learned is like, women, we're very emotional, right? It's our nature. We're emotional human beings. But sometimes when you can step back and look at things as they are, instead of bringing emotion to that and understanding that everyone comes to an issue, a problem, a conflict, any conversation with their own lens. And that has been a game changer for me to step back and say, like, that person, the decision they made that, you know, maybe affected you had nothing to do with you, Brittany. As nothing, absolutely nothing to do with you. But I think the consequence of those things is we as women, we take things personally, right? Like we're hurt or we're jaded or we're angry or when in reality, I think that that's been a big thing for me is stepping back and saying, no, it is what it is. And it has nothing to do with you at all.
Mm. It's like looking at the facts and taking the emotions out of it. I remember one of my coaches, he would go to me. He's like, well, look at the facts. These are the facts, Lo. And I'm sitting here. I'm like, it doesn't matter because I was in the motion. I'm like, I'm feeling this way. It's about me. Like my emotions are real. Validate them. And so it was just interesting when it's just like, huh, you know, but being trained to look at the facts. But yet I'm sitting here living in the emotional state where emotions are messy. You can't. They're like I say, there isn't a logical response to emotion. So if you're not willing to sit in your emotions and heal or really understand what is going on with yourself, it doesn't matter what outside resources you have. It doesn't matter what, you know, with relationships, what conversations you have with a person about what they said or did that triggered you. If you're not willing to look in and be like, oh, I was triggered because, I don't know, something happened when you were in elementary school.
Exactly.
And you just didn't learn how to process it until now. Which anyone listening, there's nothing wrong with you if you go back and realize, oh, I have this.
Yes.
From back when I was 8 years old, this happened. That's okay. Mm-hmm. It's fine. You didn't know until now. Like, how would you know?
Yeah. I think, you know, your podcast is on bravery, and I think it takes so much bravery to even recognize that that's coming from somewhere else. Yeah, but everybody has a story. Everybody has pain. And what's that quote? Hurt people, right? Mm-hmm. I keep telling myself, like, and I think that statement alone has helped me to be empathetic with some people who have hurt me, because if I can stop and say, they hurt you because they're hurting. That's been very powerful for me.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk to the audience about how the differences of like understanding that someone hurts you because they're hurting, but also having and maintaining boundaries that say this, even though this person is hurting, but they're repeatedly going over what boundaries you've had and maybe whether you've vocalized them or not in either scenario, because boundaries are very important. Like I get asked all the time, how do you maintain boundaries? I'm like, because I decided, and again, it's back to the standards thing about going full circle about dating. I have standards. I've learned enough to know like this is not okay. But I also do know hurt people do hurt people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, boundaries are important. I read the book, is it Henry Cloud who wrote Boundaries? There's a really good book out there I read years ago in therapy on boundaries, and I would recommend it to anyone. I can see the cover off the top of my head. It has a pencil on it. So if anyone Googles it, but yeah, boundaries are important. I mean, I think even in our adult life, setting those, understanding like what it is you want out of life. But I think it's also sometimes we were disappointed in our relationships with people because we also don't communicate our expectations. So a lot of times it's on us, right? Like, because we're thinking it in our head, but we've never vocalized it, you know, to someone else. And I think that's how a lot of people get disappointed.
That's so true. You got to vocalize it first. Mm-hmm. So that, again, so like if someone's repeat, like say someone crossed a boundary and they do it again, but you don't vocalize it. So then it just builds up. And so it's kind of also saying like, well, you have to vocalize it before you cut off that person. But you have to also understand, even if it's say they've done it five times, you have five times of history and repeated training on their part on how to treat you. So it's kind of like you have to give them a little bit of a pass so that they learn, and it's going to be hard, but it's also saying like, when you establish that boundary, it's not like giving you a free pass to cut off the person, because then you're not giving them a chance to change either.
No, I agree with that. I agree with that. The silent treatment, I actually had someone give me the silent treatment probably like a month or two ago. And to me, like, I am all about boundaries. But I'm also all about respect. And I think until it becomes an abusive, you know, narcissistic type relationship, then I truly believe this. The silent treatment is so toxic. It is literally like the most degrading thing you can do to another human being is to act like they don't exist. You know, that's been, I've done so much like research on it lately too, just to like understand it. But for me, you know, with setting my boundaries, and then I can think back to certain examples, like it's good to just communicate it. Right. And I don't think the silent treatment is needed unless there's some sort of like abusive relationship there.
Right. And then it's also going, if someone's giving you the silent treatment and they're not telling you what's going on with them.
Yes.
I mean, from my perspective, it's also like, okay, well, if they can't tell me what's going on and they're punishing me for not understanding, kind of looking back at me and like, do I actually want this person in my life still?
Right.
No matter how long the history is if they can't communicate, if they can't show me enough respect to be like, hey, I'm upset about something. I need some time.
Exactly.
That is completely different than just ghosting and being silent. Cause then I'm like, okay, there's something going on. I don't know what it is. They need some time. Great. They'll come to me whenever they are ready versus me being like, what the fuck happened? What did I say? Like, it's not to make it about me, but then you think about like, what did I say? What did I do? What's going on? Like, then you bring it on yourself. It's like, oh, they're giving me the silent treatment. Great. I must have fucked up somewhere. Perfect. I would like to fix it since it was like some sort of action, but sometimes some people can't do that.
No, and I think you hit the nail on the head.
All right, now that we're back after some technical God issues, we were discussing the silent treatment and how toxic it was. And I was talking about how, you know, versus telling someone saying, I need some time to talk to you about X versus just straight up giving you the silent treatment.
Yes. Yeah. I think our conversation was really good regarding this and how I believe, and I've learned this through therapy, like unless it's an abusive relationship, like it's punishment to another person. Like it's so harmful to not acknowledge another human being. And studies have actually shown, I've done some research on it recently just to understand it better. And research has shown like the emotion and the chemicals it produces is very similar to physical pain in your body. So definitely don't recommend that unless you're in some sort of abusive relationship. I mean, I'm no counselor, but I've been on both sides of it, right? Like I've received it and I've also given it at some point, but I think understanding it now helps me understand that it's not a really nice way to treat people at all. So.
No, that's interesting. I didn't know it had the same chemical response in the body.
Yes.
That makes sense. So if anxiety and excitement are the same chemical response and the only differences is what we tell ourselves. That's interesting.
Yes.
So during all over the course of all of your work thus far, what has been the biggest lesson or top three lessons you have learned?
Top three lessons. If it doesn't make you happy, walk away. I mean, that's so simple, but I feel like for so long I was taught what I should want. And I was taught what I should choose. And I was taught what would make me happy when in reality, it was someone else's choices. That's number one. Number two, get out, travel, love people. There's so much to learn about people all over the world and cultures. And I think my traveling has taught me that love truly does make the world go round. And love can be in the most simple form. And from that, I literally have on my board, I have like a whiteboard in my room, and it says, how are you going to love on people today? And it's just a reminder to me, whether that's a big act or whether that's something small, but everyone deserves love. And then I would say my third piece of advice or something I've learned would just be to take risk. I mean, life is on the other side of those big risks. That's where it lives. That's where it is. That's where the magic happens. And so, but don't be scared to fall flat on your face, because I can tell you, I've got plenty of scratches and scars from literally just eating pavement, from all the bad decisions I've made too. So.
Yeah. And you need those bad decisions to, again, like learn and grow and come home to who you are. Otherwise, if it was bubblegum and roses all the time, you wouldn't know. Like, you wouldn't know you could do hard things and take those risks.
Yeah. Life is, it's so cliche. You see all those like corny quotes, and it's like, life is what you make it, and this and that. But it truly the fuck is, right? Like, I mean, you have a choice. If you're not happy, then I don't want to hear any complaining. I don't, want excuses. Like, your life is in your hands, and you have a choice every single day when you get up how you're going to live it and how it's going to play out.
Mm-hmm. That also means you get to feel all of your emotions as well. It's not to like
be
an emotional stuffer, because I know that has been some of my issues with different coaches and programs that I've been a part of or was volunteer coaching. And I'm sitting here and I'm like, you're asking me to go back to professionally stuffing, and this is not working. Yes, I understand, like, life is what you make it. There's always positives and stuff, but you're also, it feels like you're invalidating me in this moment and being like, your emotions don't matter. Like, I'm like, wait. If you're telling me I've been acting out of anger because of something that happened when I was younger, what do you mean emotions don't matter?
Right? Yeah.
It's like acknowledging those emotions. And then once you acknowledge them and understand where they're coming from, or enough to understand where they're coming from, you're able to shift out of it, or you could choose to stay there. Again, that is your choice.
Your choice. You're right. Yeah. Emotions are, gosh, I wish, I'm sure I could, would love to see like the inside of like a woman's mind every day with like everything that's going on and all. There's probably like, I would have to guess like 50 different emotions, right? Like the average woman like daily goes through. Such an interesting topic, right?
Have you seen The Female Brain? It's a movie.
And no.
Whitney Cummings, was the lead in it, and I think she helped produce it and stuff. And there's also a book called The Female Brain, and I think it's based off of that, but it's so interesting. It's on Amazon. Yes, it's on Amazon Prime. You rent it for like a couple of bucks, but it's so worth it, because I'm watching and I'm like, oh my God, this makes so much sense now. Great. Awesome. It's just like, and then explain things in a way that it's just like, it's story form, but then it also brings in like the technical sciencey stuff in. And I'm just like, oh, okay.
That's good. I'm going to put that one on my list. I recently finished, I guess right before COVID happened, but Goop, G-O-O-P, it's Gwyneth Paltrow's Netflix series, which I thought was really great for women. But I'm going to have to put The Female Brain on my list now. Now you have me excited. I might have like a fun little indoor date night with myself tonight to watch it.
Goop. I loved Goop, and I watched the series in the first couple episodes. I'm like, geez, they're going for the hard hitting stuff right away. I kind of like it. And I kind of set it up to like the end was, I would say they were all hard topics, but the end was a little bit more softer topics going on. That I'm just like, okay, well, that's okay. It was a little underwhelming since the big setup, but yeah, it was very interesting as well. Different, again, opening up to different perspectives, different ways of like living, and how people do different health paths. Like, it's not just the Western health path. This isn't the only health path. And I don't believe there's one path either in anything in life. It doesn't have to be like the cookie cutter, this is what you do, want A, B, C, D to be living a happy, full life.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I like that. There's no one path to health. You're exactly right. We're all made different. We all have different gifts. We all have different, you know, desires in life. So what works for one person is not going to work for the next girl.
Yeah. So before we switch into our final questions, what would be one piece of advice you would give someone who is thinking that their voice doesn't matter? Like, why should I say something? Why me when, you know, Amy or Susie or whoever else is doing it?
I truly believe, Lo, that obviously we all have natural talents, right? Like, we all have a gift. Every woman has a voice because every woman has gone through a certain path, a unique path that only they have experienced. No one will ever walk that path again. And so I think if people can speak up and share their story and share their voice, whether that's, hey, here's what happened to me, or here's what lesson I learned, or here is, you know, advice I would give to someone, or, you know, different nuggets along the way, then it's so, so powerful. People sometimes will ask me, like, Brent, like, what's your most brave moment in your life, right? Like, when do you think you were the bravest? And I could say it's corporate America, quitting corporate America and starting my own business. I mean, that was, you know, gosh, like, that was scary as shit. But I don't think that's it. I think it's learning to speak up about who I am and my story, and ditching what society thought of me, and, you know, taking people's opinions and throwing them out the door. Like, that's been the bravest thing and the most vulnerable thing I've done. And I think all women should be doing it. You know, whether, you know, I'm a professional speaker for a living, and I totally get that that's people's number one fear over death. And so maybe that's not the avenue for everybody. But maybe it's writing, you know, maybe it's sharing with a close friend. Maybe it's writing an article for the local newspaper. You know, maybe it's just volunteering for that one organization that needs your help and that needs your talent and that needs your voice. But I truly believe that if we walk through life and we are not using what we've been given, it is a disservice, not only to ourselves, but to everyone around us. And I do not want to get on my deathbed and say, I did not make a difference, because everybody has the opportunity to do so.
Mm. We could just mic drop it there. Just end it right there.
Yeah. Move on. Yay, good, good, good.
So transitioning into the final questions, where can everyone find you?
Yeah, so I obviously have Facebook, obviously have LinkedIn. It's Brighter with Brit, which is the name of my business. And the name came about, I sent out like a mass text to all my friends and I said, I need help. You know, you guys know me the best. And I do not remember which person it was, but they said, Brittany, you shine a light, you know? And then I said, that's great, but everybody shines a light. So why don't we call it Brighter with Brit? But my Instagram handle, I live on Instagram mainly right now, just because of what I'm doing and the projects I'm working on. And my Instagram handle is Brighter with Brit. And that's two T's.
Okay. What's a book, resource, podcast that has added so much value to you that you would share with the audience?
Oh, wow. I'm a big self-development junkie. I feel like I've read every book out there. I think finding women, men, you know, I have two of my biggest mentors in life are men. But I think finding someone that you admire in certain things they've done in their life would be the best advice I could give someone, like following them, right? Like, because what is it? Tony Robbins says success leaves clues. Right. So there's no point in reinventing the wheel. And I have a lot of women that I follow on Instagram and follow what they're doing. I love Mel Robbins. I love Tony Robbins. I love, Sarah Blakely I'm a big fan of her. She is the woman who, first female billionaire, she created Spanx out of $5,000 in her checking account. And, she's just a kick-ass badass woman. So finding people you admire and following them and following what they're doing, you know, what are they listening to? What are they reading? But you have to be intentional about it. You have to be intentional about your own self-growth.
Hmm. I love that. I live by that all the time, like being intentional. I know I'm like looking back on my own life before I was quote unquote woke or aware of what intention was. Like I was doing it. And then when you realize how much power you have with like manifestation, then it can be kind of daunting because you're just like, well, fuck, now I have to, is this really what I want? Is this the intention that I want to have?
I like that you just said that. Now I'm like, want a t-shirt that says I got woke. I got woke. That's a good one.
So since you already said, answered this question about what your bravest moment was, what advice do you think your future self or the woman you're becoming would give you right now?
Oh gosh, these are deep questions. I love it. I love it. Leave it up to an attorney to ask the deep ones, right? I think, gosh, the biggest advice would be to just, you know, live your own life, but live it fully and understand that it doesn't matter what other people think. People are always going to have opinions, always. You're never going to be able to please anyone. And that doesn't even matter in the end because it's your life anyways. And you'll get stuck in a merry-go-round of freaking pleasing people. So ditch the opinions, live your own life, take your own path, and you know, just find joy in the process.
Finding joy in the process. It's easier said than done.
I know. I have to do gratitude every morning just as a reminder. It's a practice I've been doing for probably the last 5 or 6 years. And I write down 3 things I'm grateful for every morning. And it's completely changed my life.
And for the final question, what is your definition of brave?
My definition of brave is, I don't think it's running from scary things, right? I don't think it's saying, oh, I'm just going to conquer this. I think it's actually acknowledging that fear is there, right? That's the cool part about it. Like, let me acknowledge it. Let me invite it on my ride with me. And then let's see what we can do with it. Because I think a little bit of fear and a little bit of being scared of things in life is what's going to give you that extra nudge. I think a lot of definitions of bravery is, you know, it's like facing fear in the face or, you know, overcoming fear. And I don't think it's overcoming it at all. I think it's just welcoming it.
Hey everyone, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Built Brave. If you love this episode, heck, if you like this episode, please head on over, give it a rate, review, subscribe, like, shout it out on your social media with your major takeaways and what you loved about the episode. And as always, tag me in that at Lo Wentworth because I love hearing what you guys got out of the episodes. And until next time, remember, you've always been brave.